This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 226, where CJ is on his own and talking about the Visual Studio Connect conference, recorded live November 18th, 2017.
While many IT teams struggle with the impact of deploying Office 365, Zscaler customers are experiencing 40% or greater network performance across file download times, as well as TCP and DNS connection times, compared to using next-gen firewalls and UTMs to route Office 365 traffic locally to the internet. While you may know Zscaler as a leader in cloud security, they also have hundreds of customers who are processing over 1.2 petabytes of Office 365 traffic monthly through the Zscaler cloud. Visit www.zscaler.com to learn more.
Good morning, everybody. This is Chris, and you are stuck with me today. AC is off traveling the world and having a great time doing it. I certainly hope so anyway. So what we thought we'd do this week is bring you some of the latest breaking news from the Visual Studio Connect event, which was this past week. Tons and tons of really good stuff coming out of that show, especially out of the keynote on the first day from Scott Guthrie. But we thought we'd go through some of this news and interesting bits and pieces, just to make sure you're up to speed on everything that you can do with Azure and Visual Studio Code and all the new news and announcements from there. Now, as you can probably hear, I'm pretty croaky, and I apologize in advance for not sounding on top of my game this week. I'm heading off on holiday this week to this coming week, off to Mexico with my family and some friends, so hopefully I will be able to shake this cold and croaky throat while I'm sitting on the beach, sipping beverages and building sandcastles. But until then, apologies in advance for the odd croak, cough and sniffle. Okay, so with that out of the way, let us carry on. So, the Microsoft Connect event. This is a yearly event focused on developers. I'm actually not sure where they hold it. I think it's somewhere in New York, perhaps. But anyhow, it was on November the 15th through the 17th. And there's a bunch of people that show up. There's a really good keynote that goes on, and Scott Guthrie is usually the person in charge of the event, or at least leading the charge from the keynote side of things. And then around the event, they have a whole lot of pre-recorded sessions and other things going on. So there's a lot of free content. You can go and learn more about all of the announcements from sort of deep dive sessions on demand and online. So you can still go and do that. Obviously, you don't have to. You know, it wasn't just during the show. So without further ado, let's start diving into some of this news. So the first thing is, if you want to go and watch this keynote, then you can do so at microsoft.com/connect event. One word, no spaces, just /connect event. So that's already up and live. You can go watch Scott Goo, Scott Hanselman, and a raft of other demoers and presenters talk through all the news we're about to go through. And there was a lot. The keynote was about 1 hour 50, well, I guess 2 hours in total, and they ran through a lot of news and announcements. Now, the thing with this event is they use it as a kind of a moment in time to recap what they've been working on, the momentum they've been making in the devs tool and tool space and in Azure space, as well as news and announcements. So some of the things I'll go through today are mostly new things that are happening, not necessarily recapping a lot of what's gone on since the last Connect event. But go watch the video, go watch the keynote, and you'll get a full sort of picture of what's been going on. Okay, let's dive into some news. The first bit of news that I felt was really interesting was what's called the Azure Reserved Instances. Now, if you're not familiar with the way AWS does this, Azure Reserved Instances give you the ability to buy compute resources, so like virtual machines, and at a vastly discounted rate. So this means that you can commit to buying virtual machines and they'll give you a discount, right? You can buy it in two varieties. You can say, I want to reserve virtual machines for 1 year and get up to about 72% savings versus pay as you go, or you can commit for 3 years and get deeper discounts. So in total, I think it's up to about 82% over pay-as-you-go is the level of discounting that you can get to. Now, it kind of gets better than that. Azure are offering better than per-second billing, so that's kind of interesting as well. This means that if you use a virtual machine for, say, 4 or 5 hours, a few minutes, and then a few seconds beyond that, your bill is going to get rounded down to the nearest minute, down to the nearest minute. So they say this is called better than per second billing. And they're also working on a bunch of free cost analysis tools to help you manage your virtual machines better. Now, reserved instances are really interesting for a couple of reasons. One, if you've already got virtual machines running in your Azure subscription, you can go and purchase reserved instance capacity. You say what size virtual machines you want it to cover, you say how many you want it to cover, and you agree to the terms, which I'll get to in a second, and you can start taking advantage of the savings immediately. Now, what's really cool about this is you can say, I'm committing to this for a year, but you can terminate early. And it's not free to terminate early, but you are allowed to terminate early. You pay a 12% early termination fee for doing so, but they are breakable. So you don't have to commit to it for an entire year or 3 years if you don't want. Now, what's also very interesting about this is that they're guaranteeing the price you'll pay for those virtual machines. So it's unlikely, I guess, that costs will go up, but you're basically saying, hey, I'm reserving some instances here for this amount of money. I'm prepaying or committing to the spend, and so your bill won't change. I think this is fantastic. I know that on Monday I'm going to go in there and set up some reserved instances for the virtual machines that we use at Hyperfish and immediately start saving a whole bunch of money, especially because, you know, I can commit to them for a year, but terminate if we need to. Now, they make it really easy to switch virtual machines out as well and change the sizes and types and all that sort of stuff. You know, you don't have to stick with the virtual machines that you get this covered by initially. So virtual machines, reserved instances, really, really cool addition to Azure. One of the biggest and most interesting announcements that I thought on the Azure side of things that people should go and take a look at. Now, I'm going to run through a bunch of different news here, and we're going to switch back and forth between developer-y type things and Azure-y type things. Started with some Azure stuff, let's switch to some developer stuff. Visual Studio Code has got a bunch of momentum over the last year. If you're not familiar with it, it's kind of a lightweight cross-platform development code editor from Microsoft. Definitely go and check it out. It's fantastic. I use it on a Mac, use it on Windows. It's really good. It's gotten a lot of love. And one of the biggest things that they've added this time around in Visual Studio Code is the ability to do co-authoring with other developers right within Visual Studio Code. So you kick off a session, it gives you a link that you could Skype, instant message, or Slack to somebody. The other developer clicks on the link, signs up or signs in and gets the session up and running, and you're in a live coding session with that developer. So that means they see what you see. You can be in a debug session. You'll see variable state, I guess, for want of a better word. You could set breakpoints, all that sort of stuff. Collaborative code editing and debugging. Now, when this was announced, I was talking to AC on Slack and I was like, hey, it's a really, really cool feature, but like, is it that useful? So I was kind of like, demos really well, but would I ever actually use this? And his point was, and I'm sure we'll talk about this on the show and at another time, but his point was, yeah, this would be super helpful for a bunch of scenarios, especially in training scenarios, for example, where you could join the trainer's session, see what was going on. But more importantly, his point was, what about if you're working with remote developers? Maybe you've hired somebody to build you an app or help you on a project, and being able to join their session and walk through a particular piece of code, maybe for doing code reviews, be kind of cool. Another scenario that was really interesting was for interviews. So you'd be able to join an interviewee's code session and watch them live coding a particular problem, which I thought was kind of a cool scenario. In my day-to-day job, probably not much of an interesting scenario outside of the interviewing piece, of course. But for a lot of people, they might find this really interesting if you work with remote developers and so forth. Sticking with the Visual Studio Code piece for a moment here, they showed a bunch of really cool scenarios around really two things. Azure Functions, so local debugging on Windows and Mac for Azure Functions live from within Visual Studio Code. That was really nice. If you're doing functions development, it's really cool being able to debug and test it locally. Really nice stuff. And then the other one they showed, which I thought was pretty sweet, was building and deploying containers right from within Visual Studio to Azure and debugging. So what they did here was had a Node application, I think it was, had a Docker file, built the Docker container, made some changes, pushed it to the Azure container repository, and then launched that in Azure using App Service, and all done right from within Visual Studio Code. Now, one of the things that I was thinking about with this is, as the demo was going on, is Visual Studio Code is getting a lot of love, but they're also adding quite a few things to it. I just worry a little bit about, you know, slowly it becoming a little bloated as they add all the stuff in that's been kind of in Visual Studio, big Visual Studio for a while. So it's just a risk they run, and I certainly hope that doesn't happen, but only time will tell, I guess. So there's a bunch of nice additions in Visual Studio Code, like I said, stuff for Azure Functions, stuff for App Service, what they called Live Share, which was the connecting to another with another developer and doing co-authoring. But stepping it up a little, let's move on to mobile development. So as you know or may not know, Microsoft bought Xamarin a number of years ago and have been slowly integrating that in with the Microsoft suite of tools and so forth. But Xamarin has been invested in pretty heavily since it got to Microsoft. They announced a few things this week, first of which was the Xamarin Live Player for Visual Studio for Mac and for Windows, I believe. This will let you build and debug mobile apps for iOS and Android and do it all on your local machine and watch updates to your application as you're building it in real time. So, for example, moving things around in your XAML, updating code and so forth, and having that all live in an emulator running right beside your IDE experience. You know, as I was watching them do the demos for Live Player, I got all motivated about getting started on my MyTrips development for iOS and Android. If you're new to the show or haven't heard me talk about MyTrips before, it was a Windows phone and Windows application that I built, which was a client for TripIt.com. I use TripIt, fantastic service. I have my plans for Mexico in there all ready to go. But I built an app for Windows Phone. It was used quite a bit around the world by different folks with Windows phones. And now it's on big Windows, so to speak, so you can go get it from the Windows Store. But it was only for Windows and Windows phones. And so one of the things I've been thinking about doing, and I actually got started on it originally a couple of years ago, was building it for iOS and Android. But I'm no Swift or Java developer. And so I didn't really get too far with it. I started fleshing out the app a little bit, but didn't get very far with it. But watching these demos with the new tooling for Xamarin, I thought, hey, even I will be able to go build an iOS or an Android app using C# and XAML, which was basically how MyTrips was built for Windows Phone and Windows originally. So I got all motivated, and who knows, maybe I will go and do that when I've got some spare time, which doesn't happen very often. So maybe it will, maybe it won't. I guess we'll see. One of the other announcements that the Xamarin guys, James Montemagno, great guy, did the demo, also talked about was what's called .NET embedding. So what this means is that you can build a library for an iOS or an Android application using C#, and then they'll compile it down into a native package that you can use an iOS application or an Android application. So if you've got developers that are building iOS and Android apps, means that you can have your C# developers go and build pieces of the application in C# and then have them used in native iOS and Android apps, which is pretty sweet. The technology behind this is sort of mind-blowing, but they did a really kick-ass demo in the keynote, and I thought it was really interesting, including forms, visual layout of components and so forth right within those applications, not just, you know, like the equivalent of DLLs, but for iOS. Now, one of the other things they did was talk about open sourcing of Xamarin workbooks. So those are up on GitHub. They're open source using an MIT license. Not sure if you're familiar with those, but go check that out on GitHub if you are. Now, they also, in the blog post, pointed to a podcast, actually, that has all of the stuff covered that James did. We'll link to that in the show notes for you as well. That is definitely worth going and checking out to go a bit deeper onto all of these Xamarin announcements.
A 99.9% SLA means you're protected from power outages, bad patches, natural disasters, and maybe even a dinosaur attack. Does it protect you from yourself, though? AvePoint Backup for SharePoint Online provides full fidelity backup and recovery, from individual items to entire sites. AvePoint can run backups up to 4 times a day to ensure your data is secure. Recover anytime you want without having to pick up the phone and schedule restore windows. Learn why AvPoint is the Microsoft Cloud expert at www.avpoint.com.
ShareGate makes it easier for organizations to adopt and use the latest Microsoft productivity tools, helping millions of users be happier and more productive at work. ShareGate is trusted by over 10,000 IT admins from over 110 countries to manage, migrate, and secure their SharePoint and Office 5 environments. ShareGate is recognized as the must-have tool for day-to-day administration of on-premises, cloud, and hybrid environments. Interested in learning more? Check us out at ShareGate.com to learn how ShareGate can make you more productive.
Okay, that was really the stuff on Xamarin tooling. One of the other demos that they did was what was around a product called Visual Studio App Center. So if you're doing CI and CD for your applications today in something like VSTS or Travis or CircleCI or some other, maybe Jenkins, something along those lines, it's quite hard to do this stuff for mobile development because of the need for, you know, iOS devices and macOS and things to do compilation. And Visual Studio App Center takes away a lot of the pain of doing that for iOS and Android applications. It's an online service. You can connect it up to your GitHub repos and things like that, or your VSTS repos, and go and pull source, and it will go and trigger builds for those mobile applications. So you can go build your iOS or Android applications. And then you can go and actually deploy that build across thousands of different types of devices, or hundreds of different types of devices, iOS and Android devices. And as you know, in the Android ecosystem, there's all sorts of different devices. They're all different, different screen sizes, all that sort of stuff. And you need to go and test your apps across those things. So they make it super easy to go and build and then deploy your application across multiple devices and get test reports and see how your application goes across all of those things. How cool is that? That's pretty sweet, right? For me, doing my trips, I'd obviously want to test it on all the different iOS devices. I don't have all the different iOS devices, but I would like to go and test it on the plus size phones, ones with massive screens, smaller screen ones, different resolutions, all that sort of stuff. There's quite a few different types of iOS devices now, iPads, all that sort of stuff. So definitely worthwhile using a service like Visual Studio App Center for that. Now, back on the Visual Studio Code announcements for a second. They've added Java 9 support. So if you're a developer working in a Java environment, Visual Studio Code might be something you could take a look at now. I'm not a Java developer, so I don't know all the ins and outs of this, but they've added Java 9 support, debug support, those kinds of things, all within Visual Studio Code. One thing to mention before we move on away from Visual Studio Code again is, I don't think this was an announcement at Connect, but it was a recent addition to Code. If you're not familiar, hopefully this will help you. It is multiple project support in Visual Studio Code. So what this means is, in the past, Visual Studio Code was used. When it was used, you could open a particular folder, which was considered a project. And so if you had multiple projects, you'd have to have multiple Visual Studio Code windows. And so what they've done is added multiple project support to Visual Studio Code, which means you can open one folder in Visual Studio Code, then open another one right alongside it, all within the same window, super easy, no window juggling and all that sort of stuff. If you've got if you use multiple monitors, you'd obviously want to split that out a little bit, but it's nice if you've got a couple of projects that are closely aligned, you can have them both open in the same Visual Studio Code window. Okay, so changing gears a little bit, Kubernetes. We've talked quite a lot about Kubernetes on the show and what Azure are doing with Kubernetes. But during the keynote, they took some time to talk about Azure Container Service, the new managed container offering from Azure that supports Kubernetes. And they spent quite a lot of time demoing. Scott Hanselman did a great demo of the new support in Visual Studio, called the Visual Studio Connected Environment. One of the big problems developers have always had is how to do local development, right? You want to build and test and run code much like you would in production. So you sort of have to mirror certain parts of your production infrastructure locally or try your best to do that. It's always been kind of painful. What Visual Studio Connected Environment for AKS does is let you connect to a remote AKS instance in Azure and build, deploy, and debug containers and code that are running in a Kubernetes instance in Azure right from within your local environment. This is hugely helpful for developers. You could run Kubernetes locally, of course. You know, you might have a lower spec laptop, you might have lots of containers running. It's not quite like it would be in production. And this means that you can go and connect up to that instance running in Azure right from within your local environment, build your container code, hit F5, have it deploy up into AKS, start running and connect your local debugger with breakpoints, stepping over pieces of code, looking at variable instances, all those kinds of things. Really, really cool. You can do this from within Visual Studio and from within Visual Studio Code in the command line. Works across Windows, macOS, and Linux, and you get debugging across .NET Core code as well as Node.js. So this is just super cool. Like, I'm really looking forward to jumping on the preview for it. I think it's in preview. Yeah, still in preview. Spin up an AKS instance up in Azure. Start building your code and deploying up into that from your local machine. Really, really nice. This is what happens when Microsoft gets behind a technology. Microsoft has always been really good at developer productivity and the tools for developers building code. And so when they put their mind to it, building great tooling around a technology, this is the kind of thing that happens. And it's actually one of the things I think has been the most disappointing about building containers and Docker and all that sort of stuff is the tooling available. When you come from a Microsoft world where you're used to really good IDEs like Visual Studio and Visual Studio Code, and you have to go to command line and these other things, it's kind of disappointing, right? And I find it a lot less productive. I'm really excited to see the movements in this space from the Visual Studio team with regards to AKS, and I can't wait to try it out. I think you'll be blown away. Like I said, F5, debug, compile, develop, deploy, all natively, pretty cool stuff. Now, for enterprises or big companies using Visual Studio Team services, there is a lot of love as well at the show. Donovan Brown, who we've had on the show in the past, came on and did a really nice demo of VSTS. He covered a lot of the things that were not necessarily new news, but we're really making sure people were familiar with where they were at with the cloud service. But one of the things that he really hit home on in the demo is that it's ready for prime time. And one of the things they mentioned, or they said, that sort of helped illustrate that was how Microsoft uses it internally. So in the past, Microsoft have used all sorts of different tools and technologies for doing their bug tracking, source control management, builds, tests, deploys, all of those kinds of things. Everything from a tool called Source Depot, which was where a lot of source code used to be stored at Microsoft. But he mentioned that the Visual Studio team of around, I think, 500 developers or so is now using VSTS for all of their day-to-day management of bugs, of new work items, of releases, notes, all that sort of stuff, scrum boards, the whole nine yards, Kanban boards, I apologize, all of those sorts of things. And he also mentioned the Windows team are doing that as well. Now, the Windows team is thousands of people. That's like 20,000 people kind of thing. I mean, it is a massive team. And so they use this as an example of, you know, helping to illustrate how VSTS is ready for prime time. You know, if Microsoft can use it for building applications and projects with that many people, that covers quite a lot of the use cases out there in the real world as well. And so if scaling is a concern you've had, then hopefully that will help alleviate those issues. Speaking of scaling, one of the things that they mentioned sort of around the event, not necessarily during the keynote per se, was what's called the Git virtual file system. So one of the issues that Microsoft has when you're dealing with teams like the Visual Studio team and like the Windows team working with source code is, A, the source code is really big for some of these products. Like for Windows, it's like 300 gigabytes or something. But also, when you have that many people collaborating, your source control system has to be rock solid. With Git, one of the issues was it's not really built to deal with 300 gig repos that change a lot when you have, say, 20,000 developers committing thousands of times a day and that sort of thing. And so what Microsoft built to help them use Git as a source repo or a source control system was what's called the Git virtual file system. And so what this means is that when you're dealing with really big repos, you can effectively be working on the repo like it was on your own machine, but without all of the files and those sorts of things having to be synced down. So the Windows code base, just to give you an illustration of how this works or what impact this has, the Windows code base has over 3.5 million files in it, and it's over 270 gigabytes in size. That is a lot of code. I don't know about you, but my projects are nowhere near that big. That must be bajillions, that's a technical term, bajillions of lines of code in all sorts of different languages and all those sorts of things. And so to give you an idea, when they ran Git checkout, it took 3 hours to get the source, and then a Git status call took almost 10 minutes to run. So checking that across, you know, 3.5 million files. And then the clone, like to copy all that stuff locally, 12 hours plus for Windows. So these are all detailed in the Microsoft DevOps blog called Announcing GVFS, Git Virtual File System. And so they've got a bunch of examples in here. And so basically what they say is, like, now you've got a Git experience for really large repos and with thousands of people that are much more manageable. It takes a few minutes to clone instead of 12 hours. You're only pulling the stuff you need, those kinds of things. So it's pretty nice indeed if you're working on large repos. Now, is this something you would use? I'm not sure. My repos are not this big, but for some companies, I'm sure this is real productivity hog, dealing with large repos and thousands of devs. And so for you, it may make more sense. But anyway, you can go check it out, github.com/Microsoft/Git and github.com/Microsoft/GVFS. That was the VSTS and Git love. Then we moved on to some SQL and data love. And a couple of things they covered. Scott Gu talked about the progress they'd made with SQL Server 2017 for Linux, their Docker support and Windows support, obviously. But then they talked about a service called the Azure SQL Database as a Service and the improvements being made there. Things like CLR support. So if you've added code and so forth, it'll make things like database migrations from on-premises SQL Server to the cloud much more easy. And also, speaking of migration, they've come out with a new service called the Data Migration Service. So what this will let you do is connect to a existing database, select your destination of where you want that to go, which databases and so forth, and then do near zero downtime migration between the two and get you back up and running on a new database in Azure nice and quick. No code changes is the goal for them, but obviously you've got to change the connection string of what database you're connecting to. So that's pretty cool. Data Migration Service will definitely be worth checking out if you're trying to migrate some of your databases to Azure. Also, they talked about support for other types of databases. They talked about the progress they've made with MySQL as a service and Postgres as a service in Azure. So if you're a Postgres customer or a MySQL customer and use those databases, we use Postgres at Hyperfish quite a lot. Azure now has managed services for those types of databases that you can go and buy in Azure and use. They offer things like elastic scaling, so you can, you know, ramp up, ramp down when you need it, extra compute capacity, that sort of thing. You can do that scaling with zero downtime as well, so you can go and change your scale requirements or capacity requirements with zero downtime, which is super nice. And of course, it's compatible with MySQL that you'd use anywhere else or Postgres that you'd use anywhere else. One of the really cool announcements that they made is they're adding MariaDB support. So I'm not super familiar with MariaDB. I haven't used it, but from what I understand, MariaDB was built by the original founder of MySQL, and he actually did a video segment in Scott Guthrie's keynote at the event talking about MariaDB and its support for Azure's support for it coming up. They also announced that they're joining the MariaDB Foundation, which will obviously help them make sure that MariaDB is going to be a really good offering in Azure. There's great support for it. It actually made me want to go and learn more a little bit about MariaDB and see how it sort of how it works, what its benefits and its pros and cons are against something like SQL Server or Postgres or what have you. Pretty cool stuff. Sticking on the data sort of theme, they talked about Cosmos DB. So we've covered that on the show pretty extensively. But Cosmos DB, there's some new stuff being added to that. Cassandra API is being added to Cosmos DB. So if you're wanting to program against Cosmos DB using the Cassandra API, you can go and do that, which was pretty nice. So Cosmos DB still getting love. There's just a lot of interesting and exciting data announcements between the stuff with MariaDB, Cosmos DB, MySQL, Postgres, the migration service, Azure SQL Database as a Service, CLR support, SQL 2017 Linux, Docker, and Windows support. It's pretty cool stuff. Great to see some really nice announcements there.
Are you being asked repeatedly to integrate different business systems in ever narrower timeframes and with increasing process complexity? What if you could standardize the way you build these business processes so your team are focusing on higher value tasks versus the nuts and bolts of running the processes and integrations? Nintex can make it happen. With a Nintex platform, workflows from person to person, system to system, to the cloud and back. Got a custom system you want to connect with? No-code extensions let you plug into systems simply and easily using REST and Swagger. With Nintex, work just flows, so your teams can work smarter, work faster, and be more connected than ever. Try it out free for 30 days at www.nintex.com/try-NWC.
Okay, sticking on the data theme for a second, the announcements didn't stop. They announced a new service called the Databricks service. If you're not familiar with Databricks, it's not a service so much from, you know, built by Microsoft. Databricks was an external thing beforehand, but now you'll be able to get it in Azure. It's a data analytics or data analytics platform based on Apache Spark. So if you're familiar with Apache Spark, it's a platform for crunching lots of data. They're doing native Azure integration for it. So you'll be able to go and spin up a Databricks service in Azure, integrates natively for storage, integrates natively for things like Azure AD for security and access management. You can use R, SQL, and Scala in there. Go check out the demo in the keynote where they dive into a bunch more detail. I actually haven't used Apache Spark or Databricks before. It looked like a pretty interesting offering for crunching lots and lots of big data and spitting out the results and then visualizing in Power BI, for example. So pretty nice stuff. Right, so Scott Guthrie was sort of the keynote lead, if you will. He wrapped things up really talking about the momentum of Azure, making sure everybody were aware of everything they'd done over the last year. Also finishing up with a reiteration of how to get started with Azure. And one of the things we've spoken about on the show before is this thing called the Azure Free Trial. AC and I mentioned it a couple of shows ago, I think, where you can go and get a $200 credit in Azure and a one-year trial of a whole bunch of different services for getting started in Azure. And I think I mentioned at the time that there's enough stuff in the Azure Free Trial for you to get, you know, a web application with an API and a database and all that sort of stuff up and running for a year with no problem at all. So if you are looking to do something like that, definitely go and check out the Azure Free Trial. Also, you know, after your 1 year completes, there are a bunch of services that remain free after that. So definitely go and check that out. But so he sort of wrapped up the event with a quick reminder of how to get started, go get some free credits, go get your free trial, and start playing around with all of this really cool stuff that's been coming out in Azure land. So that was basically the keynote. I'm sure there's a few things that I may have missed, announcements and those sorts of things. Definitely go and check out the website, microsoft.com/connectevent. One word, no spaces, no underscores. There's lots of interesting sessions, getting started with the bot framework and Cortana skills, Kubernetes the easy way, cross-platform apps with Visual Studio, Xamarin, .NET, migrating your apps to Azure Virtual Machines, get started with the .NET Standard 2.0, Zero to DevOps with Visual Studio Team Services. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. lots of great sessions. Definitely go check it out if you're a developer. Download some of the or watch some of the videos and learn all about these interesting announcements.
CJ's Hyperfish automates the collection of user profile information from users in organizational directories such as Office 365, SharePoint, Active Directory, and HR systems. The secure service supports on-premises, hybrid, and online environments. Bring your directory to life at hyperfish.com.
AC's Voitanos delivers on-demand video-based training for developers on the latest SharePoint extensibility model from Microsoft in his course, Mastering the SharePoint Framework.
Okay, on to the most important part of the show, the picks. AC's not here, so I've got three picks for you today, and in no particular order. The first one is hopefully super useful to you. If you're a Chrome user, like I am, I quite like it. It's a bit of a memory hog, but currently it does the trick for me. I don't know if you know, but you know how you can drag tabs in and out of Chrome windows and between different Chrome windows and things? You can also do it for multiple tabs. So in Chrome, if you select a tab, I'm going to do this as I speak, select a tab, hit the Shift key if you're on Windows, and select another tab, you'll notice all of those windows can be grabbed as one group. How cool is that? You can also do it for individual tabs. So if you click, I think it's Control and different bunch of different tabs, you can pick different tabs from different parts of your window and group them together into a new window or drag them into another Chrome window. Really nice for rearranging which tabs are in which Chrome windows. Definitely tweet me if this was news to you. I would love to hear that I've helped somebody. Oh, speaking of Twitter, actually, good point. This is not really a pick, kind of a side note. I have changed my Twitter handle. So I was at LoungeflyZ, and I am no longer at LoungeflyZ. I am at C_F_Johnson. C for Chris, F is for my middle name, Foster, and then obviously Johnson. I felt like my Twitter handle was kind of lame, LoungeflyZ. Nobody really knew what it was. There's a background story behind it, but it was kind of, it's my Xbox handle as well, and I kind of just went to Twitter. So anywho, I felt like I needed a better Twitter handle, one that was more aligned with my name, and so I switched to C_F_Johnson. So you don't have to do anything. It just changed. So if you follow me already, don't have to do anything. Anywho, that was a bit of a side note. Okay, on with the rest of the picks. I don't know if you're a Reddit readers. I love Reddit. I subscribe to a bunch of subreddits, pretty cool stuff. One of the subreddits I found the other day was called Cockpits. If you're an aviation enthusiast, this is pretty sweet. It's basically a subreddit dedicated to cockpits and photos of cockpits and all that sort of stuff. And so they've got beautiful photos of different aircraft, old, new, you know, the whole nine yards, everything from space shuttle through to World War II era aircraft, the whole nine yards. So definitely go check it out. reddit.com/r/cockpits. Okay, final pick. Tesla. AC, I know if you're listening to this, probably stole your pick for next week, buddy. Sorry. Tesla had an event called, or for their new semi-truck that they're coming out with. They unveiled it this week. Pretty cool stuff. I'm sure AC and I will dive into this more in a future show. But they came out with two new style of trucks that are going to compete with diesel trucks, 500-mile range, great cost savings over diesel, fantastic specs in terms of the speed that they can go, the gradients that they can tackle, what they can tow, all that sort of stuff. Really cool. Tesla.com/semi. It's definitely worth checking out. At the end of the show, they did kind of a, hey, there's one more thing. In fact, it was kind of a mega, hey, there's one more thing. They unveiled a new Tesla Roadster, which won't come out until 2020 and will probably cost about $250,000. So not really within my reach. One can dream, right? But the Tesla Roadster, they're coming out with a new version. This thing is insane. It will do 1.9 seconds. Yes, you heard that right. 1.9 seconds, 0 to 60. Complete and utter insanity. This is going to put your eyeballs in the back of your head, for sure. 620-mile range, It'll be the fastest car ever. I don't think anything's broken 2 seconds to 60 miles an hour. So kind of incredible. It's also got four seats. So can you call it a sports car? I suppose you can if it does under 2 seconds, right? Kind of mental. But anyway, definitely go check that out as well. So those are my three picks: Chrome Multiple Tabs, the Tesla Semi event, and a subreddit called Cockpits on reddit.com. Hopefully this show has been interesting from a news perspective. Again, I'm sorry I'm pretty flat today. I'm pretty sick. I'm not feeling the greatest, so thanks for bearing with me and sticking with us. AC will be back next week, and we'll be back to our regular programming. So thanks again. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you another time.
Did you like this episode? Please tweet about it and drop a 5-star review in iTunes. Word of mouth recommendations are the most effective ways for us to grow the show. We'd really appreciate it. If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as an MP3 or WAV file and provide a link so we can play your question on the show. Our theme music is brought to you by Keith Ritchie. For more information on Keith's music, head to music.kritchie.com. You can subscribe to us in iTunes and Google Play Store by searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find show notes of each episode. You can also find us on Facebook searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or on Twitter at MS Cloud Show. And finally, sign up for our mailing list by heading over to our website and entering your email to interact with us, participate in upcoming interviews, and other cool stuff. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.